We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Well, it is a big week this week with the debate and a lot of other things going on in the political world. And of course, President Trump has said that the vice presidential pick is at the debate this week. So we'll still see how that goes. But if you weren't aware of this story, we need to talk about how prolifically, just out in the open, in your face, the sexual deviancy of our nation's top leaders is just on full display. And I'm actually talking about both sides. So this is not, unfortunately, limited to Democrats or Republicans. It's not limited to people who only profess to not believe in God or just Catholics like Joe Biden. This is something that I believe is a very clear display of Romans 1 in our culture and how God has basically at this point given us over to the utter depravity of the human heart. And libs of TikTok and a few other accounts, but primarily libs of TikTok, posted a few pictures from the man that Joe Biden's administration just promoted to the White House Associate Communications Director. And this is someone who is clearly a homosexual or maybe even queer. He apparently identifies as non-binary, wears dresses, wears female clothing. I mean, if you look at these pictures, it's just a very obvious depravity and sexual perversion on display. And there have been a number of past tweets that this individual, if you want to Google this, it's Tyler Cherry is his name. And he's come under criticism for a lot of his past tweets that are very supportive of BLM, not supportive of ICE and immigration. I mean, so from a policy perspective, he's kind of what you would expect from the Biden administration. But for the press secretary, Karine Jean-Pierre, who is the first open lesbian and, you know, LGBTQ affirming, quote unquote, you know, queer theory individual that's on prominent display for that office. Now they are continuing to populate the White House communications office with all of these sort of queer theory subscribers. And of course, the conservative right is correctly outraged at this and saying this is irresponsible, this is disgusting, this is perverted, all of those things, and I agree. And the problem that I see, though, with the consistency that is lacking on the conservative right is that those very same people are perfectly fine with Bruce Jenner calling himself Caitlyn Jenner, being an advisor and a spokesperson and to Donald Trump, and a Fox News contributor as a so-called woman. And so let's be honest here. Both parties have totally embraced sexual deviancy and queer theory. And you can't call out one but be okay with the other because, well, you know, Bruce Jenner just is on our side with women's sports. Well, you know, not as bad. At least he's conservative. And well, it's not as bad because, you know, he doesn't really think of himself as fully transitioned. He just likes to be, I mean, whatever your excuse. Right. This is wrong biblically. And the two candidates for the nation's highest office are both completely fine with this. So let's welcome in our good friend Steve Dace from the Steve Dace Show at The Blaze TV, because I know that we are going to get some good preaching from him today. But Steve, the problem that I have as a Christian with the way that we are overly politicizing this is that if Caitlyn Jenner, Bruce Jenner, was on the left and was appointed to the White House Office of Communications, conservatives would have the very same problems. But when it's somebody that we think is on our side politically, then we're happy to have this big tent. And no one seems to be willing to just straight up call it all out as wrong and perverted and a manifestation of Romans 1. So good morning, and what say you?
I agree. I also don't think this is anything new. I mean, I did shows for years where Obamacare was terrible and an evil, but now we're going to nominate for president the one guy who had the idea before Barack Obama did, Mitt Romney, and just take that issue off the table. And still, by the way, run on and message, well, if Romney wins, we're going to overturn Obamacare, the very policy that he actually came up with in Massachusetts, and that at the time, the old management of the Heritage Foundation tried to retcon with a white paper saying, you know, government mandates actually might be conservative. The conservative case for government mandates, like that conservative case stuff didn't just start with David French in 2017. That's been going on my entire career. I mean, I remember listening to Rush daily, just losing his mind over John McCain. And every time George W. Bush was going to do something remotely conservative, John McCain made sure to form a gang in the Senate and stop it. Okay, and suddenly he wins the nomination, and it's like we pulled out this Bible verse, and John McCain won the Republican primary and was credited him the magic R, which stands for righteousness. Okay, I mean, this has been going on over and over and over again. I mean, this is just what you're talking about are just the latest and most obvious and salacious examples of a dynamic that has killed us on the right for a generation. That in the end, nothing matters more to us. Nothing does than the 15 seconds to an hour, however long it takes, depending on where you live, that you get to go in and vote for a Republican to quote save America, and then the level of participation and critical thinking that we do in this process in between those moments is really just not there. I mean, essentially, we're like a teenage boy in heat who, you know, can't wait to get a girl to the altar and to the wedding night and hasn't really contemplated what the rest of that experience called a marriage is going to entail, you know, for like the rest of his life. Okay. And I mean, that's essentially what we have reduced our political activism to. And so what you're describing is, you know, this is what Jesus talks about. When the salt has lost its savor, it's of no use to anybody except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. And what's being revealed here, and you mentioned the Romans 1, and I mean, this is a daily thing on our show for the last few years, that all the signs of a Romans 1 judgment are pretty obvious here. And so in a godless culture, you can make all the kinds of calculations that you describe all the time because you're godless. Now, in a biblically based culture, you're going to struggle with these kinds of moments. You'll still succumb to them because we are and still Romans 7, you know, the evil I want to do or I don't want to do, I do. The good I want to do, I don't. Okay, what a wretch am I? We're still wretches, okay? And so we'll still have these kinds of moments. But in a biblical-based culture, eventually you'll have reform movements or people with a prophetic voice will stand up to call truth to power and to call people back to righteousness. And you'll have awakenings and you'll have, those sorts of events, revivals, that bring people back to the narrow road. In a godless culture, we are given over. And so those things aren't forthcoming. And so what'll happen is as you read through Romans 1 starting in verse 17 and get to the end, you'll just continue to sink and sink further into the abyss. You'll continue to circle and circle the drain until you reach rock bottom. And you know, one translation of the end of Romans 1 says, these become people who delight in new ways to create evil and encouraging others to do the same. And that's essentially where we are right now. And the best that we can do in a godless culture, essentially, from a civic engagement standpoint, is really become one of two variations of Roman cults or movements. One, my colleague Oran McIntyre has coined it the total state, okay? And this is for the glory of Rome, and everything is for Rome. Rome for Rome's sake, basically. We just perpetuate ourselves like the great, like a galactic bureaucracy, even claiming we have the superior culture while, you know, essentially succumbing to all forms of decadence and everything else that says otherwise. The other is, you know, and that's what you see on the left, that the state is in whom we live and breathe. As Chesterton said, when the government removes the government becomes the god. That's what you see manifesting on the left. What you see manifesting on the right, and this has, again, been manifesting for many, many years. This current iteration is just the most obvious exploitation of it. But the idea of a Caesar, or I guess we'll call it a Red Caesar, and this is the one strong man. You hand him the keys to the city as they handed Julius Caesar the kings of the key to the city to save them from the barbarians. But then, of course, he never gives it back. And he did do that, but he never gives it back. And one generation later, his nephew Augustus becomes the first Roman emperor to declare himself God. And so that's essentially what the other avenue is, that there's one singular strong man movement that, you know, will be called upon. It could be the outlaw. And it can manifest in many different ways. There were some Caesars in Rome that were at least somewhat moral, and then there were many that were not. You know, it could be an anti-hero like the outlaw Josie Wales. It could be many manifestations, but this Caesar is now king, and therefore we have to conform to the king. Okay, and so we can be disgusted by homosexuality, but when Nero shows up to marry his slave in the Senate, we applaud. All right. I mean, because the ultimate plumb line here is the king. The problem we're going to have in this era moving forward, if you are a spirit-filled believer, is that these distinctions are going to become more and more obvious. And going back to Rome again, the pressure that you are going to constantly feel to conform to one of them. This is what Paul is addressing much throughout his letter to the Roman church. This is the first diverse group of believers, Gentiles and Jews alike in a large enclave. And so they're struggling to mix together, number one. And then, of course, the external pressures to conform to the Greco-Roman world on the other. And he's addressing many of these, murky waters they will have to navigate. That's what it's going to look like in post-Christian America for the spirit-filled believer. And that's what it looks like right now. And the pressure you're going to feel to conform to one of these all the time is going to be relentless and daily. And it's the opposite pressure that Americans felt for generations in this country to conform to the Judeo-Christian moral ethic, because it had hegemony in the culture, and it's what the culture was based on and the institutions were built upon. Well, that polarity is now reversed, and the spirit-filled believers are going to face that daily pressure of conforming now.
So well said. And I'm talking with Steve Dace, who's host of the Steve Dace Show on Blaze TV. You can follow him on social media on X at Steve Dace Show. And in reading through Romans 1, and actually my pastor yesterday, because we're continuing the series of Because You Asked and some of these critical questions from today's headlines and actually viewing them through a biblical worldview lens, because we have to as believers. We went yesterday through what does the Bible say about sex and gender? And obviously Romans 1 came up. And one of the things that my pastor pointed out that I thought was very good to underscore was when you get to the end in verse 32, it says, although they know God's righteous decree that those who do mm-hmm. such things, all of the depravity, deserve death, they not only continue to do them, do these very things, but also approve or encourage those who practice mm-hmm. them. I mean, we're talking about people not who are just completely rejecting
You're
God. I mean,
these
are
Pride Month. Yes.
Yeah. And these are people who. Go ahead. Yeah.
The reason why is because these are three things. Here's something your audience must always remember. Something will always rule. Something must always be worshipped, period. That's just the way the creation was determined. There are no neutral spaces. We've had one officially secular government ever. It was called the Soviet Union. They marched into a former church called the Kremlin and declared the state to be God. The French Revolution was going to be Thomas Paine's secular revolution. And what they did, though, is they marched into the Cathedral of Notre Dame after they guillotined the aristocrats. They marched into the cathedral and did the same to the church and the bishops, and they replaced the Virgin Mary with the statue to the goddess of reason. And just because something must be worshipped. We have to understand this. Someone's worship will be at the apex of a culture. All right. It will either be ours or it'll be something from the pagan, occultic, demonic world. Period. End of sentence. Those are your only two options. And their small g gods are jealous too in different ways. And so they are going to proclaim their pride. They are going to evangelize their movements. They do not want to be just left alone. Okay. And I promise you, I just want to be left alone has lost in every history book ever of all time. Can I go back? I want to say something about the Caesar thing. Can I say something about that for just a second, Genevieve? See,
absolutely.
I love Ron DeSantis, but DeSantis is also a Caesar. If you know anything about the Florida Republican Party, I mean, it was a disaster. I mean, Marco Rubio is a John Bircher in the Florida Republican Party. He has forced the Florida Republican Party to move the state to the right and stand for these things against its own will. I mean, you wouldn't even have the pathetic Republican majority in the House now you have if DeSantis had not vetoed their redistricting map and made them call them in a special session in the dead of summer to come up with a different one that helped provide the margin of victory for Republicans to take over the House. He just vetoed one of their budgets just last week. So by the singularity of his conviction, he has driven that state to the right. Now, he might be a Constantine kind of a Caesar, one who is more than friendly to Christianity and will lead to the establishment of Christianity as the dominant ethos and pathos in Rome, okay? But he is a Caesar nonetheless. There is no manifest small r Republican system anywhere really in the country that gives us the agency to work the normal political process. That is pretty much gone. And so we're left with that right now on the right. And it's because we don't have any citizenship. We don't have a grassroots. We haven't participated in school boards and city councils and state legislative elections for decades. Because going back to what I said at the top, we've reduced all of our political activism and civic involvement to this one 15-second to hour-long event where we vote once every 4 years and usually only for federal offices. And so therefore, the groundswell that we need to make our red states actually as red as the blue states are blue simply just does not exist. We spend way too much time watching Fox News compared to knowing who our state legislator is.
Yeah. And this just underscores exactly why we have to be more engaged than just the siloed Democrat versus Republican and think that we are doing a civic good by simply participating in the vote. Because, again, as Romans 1:32 says, although they know God's righteous decree, I mean, these are talking about people like the Christian who knows what is good. We not only continue to do these very things, but also approve of those who practice them. My challenge to every listener today, if you are just saying, I wholeheartedly support whatever the Republican Party is doing because they're a little better than the Democrats, then you are totally missing the point of what it means to stand up as a Christian in the culture and reject the false gods and the false ideologies and actually rightly divide truth from error. Yeah, at the end of the day, we have to vote and one is better than the other, but we still have to stand up and speak the truth. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. This June marks 2 years since the overturn of Roe v. Wade, but did you know that the number of abortions actually increased in the following year? In 2023, the amount of abortions reached its highest level since 2012. Preborn continues to stand strong for women in crisis. Preborn is a ministry of compassion that showers women and babies with God's love, providing free ultrasounds to mothers to introduce them to the precious life growing inside of them. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, she is twice as likely to choose life. $28 sponsors one ultrasound, and $140 helps to rescue 5 babies. Your generous tax-deductible donation will also help to provide women who choose life with assistance for up to 2 years. So please give your best gift. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And as we are talking about the consequences of a culture that has excised God from society and continues on this rapid course of depravity, as Romans 1 talks about, I mean, you have this progression of taking God out and then eventually God turns you over to your depraved mind. We're seeing the consequences in policy as well. And one of the best examples currently is a new look from Congress at women in the draft. And this coming from U.S. News, it says, according to a 2019 Pew Research Center report, six countries, Israel, Mali, Morocco, North Korea, a few others, draft women into military service, and other countries require women to register for the draft. And while the latest proposal stands little chance of actually becoming law, it is reigniting a long simmering debate about the draft and the role of women in it. And this is what they say. I mean, listen to this. Now, amid declining military recruitment levels, Congress is taking another look, and this is where women currently don't have representation. That's what they think this is about. I think this is a total consequence of queer theory. But let's bring in Representative Chip Roy, one of our good friends of the show from the great state of Texas. And Chip, I know that you are a solid Bible-believing Christian, and this is just yet another way that the secular left is trying to blur all lines between men and women and the differences, and to actually put women in the draft and saying, as a lot of these news outlets are arguing and suggesting, is that this is now somewhere that women aren't represented. I'm okay with not being represented in the draft, but what say you?
Yeah, good morning, Jenna. I mean, look, this is something we debated pretty strongly a few years ago. You might remember when this was coming up, and I was one of the leaders in the charge to highlight it, bring it to the American people, and explain how this is a terrible idea, and frankly, how offensive it is. And this one for me is like the main or the significant hill for me to die on with respect to fighting my colleagues on it. And it's not just the radical progressive left. There are a handful of Republicans, both in Congress and generally, who will make and quote these ridiculous arguments, right, and just say, well, the feminists have brought this on themselves, and all the, you know, if the women want to have, you know, quote, equality, then, you know, they need to be able to be in the draft, too. And it has it exactly backwards. There's no actually good argument that I've heard. You know, I'll have my colleagues that will say, well, Chip will never be drafted. That's never going to happen. And at the same time, they'll say something like, yeah, but we'll only need this if China, you know, invades and or you know, we'll have a massive, you know, land war with China. And there'll be conflicting arguments. And they'll say, oh, don't worry, Chip, women will only be put like manning drones. They won't be put on the front lines. But then go back and see the argument about China and say, well, we need the numbers if we're going to win. And we need to have people, including, you know, women involved. So the arguments are always inconsistent. But for me, it's pretty simple. I don't want to be in a society in which we are drafting our women to put them into combat, to put them into the military to fight and serve in that way. Women have a long, rich history in defending and serving this country in a variety of ways, whether they volunteer in the armed forces today or whether historically, whether it was Rosie the Riveter or whether it was significant efforts on the home front, whether it was Abigail Adams keeping the house and home and family, you know, when John was traveling and down at the constitutional conventions, all the things that he was doing. Those are the things that I think we got to remember about our rich history. I strongly oppose it. But remember this. Last week we had a vote in Congress, an amendment in the National Defense Authorization Act, might have been 2 weeks ago, in which we had a question as to whether or not we should make these standards you know, be improved or be brought back to before they were watered down in order to allow for women to be able to achieve those standards. And we had 11 Republicans who voted against that. The amendment failed 205 to 216. So there are 11 Republicans in the House of Representatives who are saying to America, they do not believe the standards ought to be what they used to be. The standards ought to be watered down in order for women to be able to achieve them. There is your problem in a nutshell, Jenna.
Yeah, and I applaud you for standing up and pointing out these inconsistencies and arguments. And you're right to point out that a lot of Republicans are basically just saying, well, fine, feminists, if you just want to have equality, then then fine. We will put consequences on you instead of taking the hard line and actually saying no to the feminists. But the question arises, well, you know, back in World War II, when this was kind of first suggested that maybe women need to be in the draft, it was limited to the one role of nurses that women could actually occupy. But now there are a lot of other roles that women have other than, you know, on the front lines or in the foxholes and so forth. And so some outlets and commentators are suggesting that if Congress limited the draft to some maybe non-combat roles, then this would be an acceptable compromise. What do you think about that solution?
Well, it goes to the heart of kind of what I was getting at before. First of all, I don't trust these people, okay? I don't trust them to limit what the role is. I don't trust them to say that my daughter won't be put in combat. I don't trust them to make sure that my daughter would, frankly, be protected. And frankly, it's not their call. And this is one of those things that I think we need to start stipulating and saying a little more loudly, Jenna. Look, there is a world, a society, a community in which I want to live. And this isn't it. I don't want to waste a whole lot of time arguing the details and the intricacies of what my daughter can or can't do or should do in a draft. My answer is pound sand. You're not drafting my daughter. Look, that's just the world in which I want to live. We can debate. My daughter has a free will. If she wants to go serve in the military when she's an adult, she can go do that. But I'm not going to be a world in which, as a man, as a society, that we're going to look at our women and say, yes, we're going to draft you, put you in military, and put you to service. People always bring up the thing with Israel, by the way. And first of all, remember that in Israel, they aren't drafted, you know, to be put, they can go do a public service component. Also remember, Israel is surrounded and under constant attack, and they're also a very, very small country. But also, I just disagree. You know, I just wouldn't do that. It wouldn't be my choice. And we actually have a free will as a country, and we get wrapped around the axle. We have to have these big, you know, crazy, convoluted debates. And at some point, I just want to live in a country like that I want to live in, a community in which I want to live and be safe and secure and follow God and follow our beliefs and value systems, right? I mean, I want to have a public school where my kids can actually pray to God. There's nothing sacrosanct, so to speak, ironically use that term, about saying, oh, well, because somebody interpreted the First Amendment one day a long time ago, and because they reinterpreted Thomas Jefferson's, you know, wall statement, that suddenly my kids can't pray in school. But yet we've accepted that for 60 years and our country's worse for it. So I don't accept the premise. Why are we even talking about it? My answer is no. I don't mean that to you. I mean generally.
Yeah, and that's the correct answer. I mean, I fully agree with you. And, you know, as Steve Dace, who was on in the previous segment, often says, you know, we are not actually a nation of laws and rules. We are a nation of political will. And I think he's absolutely right, because as you just rightly pointed out, Representative Chip Roy, my guest today, that we have our laws, we have our supreme law, the U.S. Constitution, we have a First Amendment that protects the people's right to freely worship and to freely exercise our sincerely held religious beliefs, to exercise our religion. And yet, just because 60 years ago our Supreme Court has gotten that wrong, then somehow we think that that type of precedent has to be compelled upon us today, instead of going back and saying, well, wait a minute, at the very inception of this whole line of precedent or these whole lines of statutes from Congress, you got it wrong. And we need to go back and unwind all of this terrible precedent that has governed us for so many years. Why do we not have the political will on the right to stand up and make those arguments? I mean, you do, and Thomas Massey does. I mean, there are a few other people that do, but largely on the right, it seems like all we can do is just be a little less bad than the Democrats.
Well, this is a constant problem, Jenna, and it is, and I'm going to focus on this a little bit in the coming weeks as we kind of have turned the corner heading towards the election. I want to make very clear, because I'm already hearing excuses for next January about what we can and can't do, if we're even able to convince the American people to give us the trifecta of the White House, the Senate, and the House. I've already heard top-ranking Republicans in the House saying, well, we're going to have to be, you know, modest in what we're asking for because we're not going to have 60 votes in the Senate. They're not even hiding it, right? There's always an excuse, right, Chip? You got to understand, you know, this is what governing looks like. First of all, we don't govern. We represent. And in fact, we are not representing the people that sent us here. I was not sent here to increase spending and mortgage our future. I was not sent here to leave our borders wide open in chaos and criminals and terrorists and China being empowered. I wasn't sent here to have fentanyl pouring into our streets. I wasn't sent here to have, you know, criminals, you know, let out of jail and endangering our people. I wasn't sent here to weaken the military and make it woke. I wasn't sent here to have endless wars without, you know, actually putting skin in the game, et cetera, and woke corporations and not going to the doctor of my choice. Yet that's what we're doing. And our offer in return, to your point, is milquetoast Democrat light. And last November, when I went to the floor of the House and I said, name one thing Republicans said they can do, or that the Republicans did that we said we would do. And I have not been criticized by my Republican colleagues more than anything I've done than for that speech. The number of times they came into the conference meetings and all that, and they said, I can't believe you would say that. Why are you pointing at Republicans saying, name one thing? You know, we can't control the Senate and all this stuff. I said, guys, the simplest answer is to do one thing. Pick a fight and mean it. Put it all on the line. Quit holding on to your election certificate like it's your lifeblood, like it's the most important thing on earth, that it's your precious, to quote Lord of the Rings. Let go. Do something with what God's given you and your ability to represent the people. Do something with your honor and your duty. Do something when you're in Congress to say, you know what, I left the mark. And when I leave Congress, it's not just going to be, well, I guess the country's on a, you know, less bad slope into slouching into Gomorrah, to quote Robert Bork.
Yeah, and it is so true that people who get elected go to Congress at their campaigns. They say, oh, we want to do something, we want to create change, and then they get there, and then they're so concerned about not getting reelected that they end up not doing the things that they said they would do. And your colleague, Representative Jim Jordan, I think that's actually the title of his book, like, Let's Do What We Said We Would Do. And for the people who make all of these kinds of campaign promises, I mean, it's almost just laughable now, Representative Roy, that we know as a voting populace that campaigning is basically just bluffing. And it's just saying, you know, here's what we'd like to do in a grandiose, perfect world, but then we'll make a ton of compromises. And yeah, there are compromises that have to be made. That's the nature of it. But if they're so concerned about reelection that they don't make the best decisions in the moment at the time on specific bills, then what good actually is it? And we have about a minute left, but I'll give you just that full minute to respond to that.
Well, look, I think as we look ahead towards November, I've had a few, and we'll come back and do it on another show. There's been a few races that have frustrated me in primaries. I think that Republicans are back to their old tricks, some of the establishment Republicans. But there's an overall movement. This is the positive side, right, where the American people are saying enough. And so come November, you know, whatever happens, if Republicans are given the power, we need to do something with it, or voters will remember, okay? The American people like Riley Gaines, people like Chloe Cole, people like Scott Smith in Loudoun County or Mark Hout in Philadelphia, they're the ones taking matters into their own hands and fighting back. States are fighting back. People are fighting back. We need to represent them. We need to fight back if we want to be able to hold on to the majority to be able to carry this country.
Well, thank you for always fighting back and standing firm on the truth. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
We live in a day when America's families are under attack like never before.
Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of the American Family Association.
The war against biblical principles rages on numerous fronts. The internet, Hollywood, Washington, D.C., America's corporate boardrooms, and the list goes on. At American Family Association, we're committed to standing against the enemies of God, the enemies of your family. And we recognize it's an impossible task without God's favor and your partnership. Thank you for being faithful to pray for this ministry, to give financially, and to respond to our calls for activism. What you do on the home front is crucial to what we do on the battlefront. We praise God for your faithfulness, and may He give us many victories in the battles ahead as we work together to restore our nation's biblical foundations.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, as Representative Chip Roy said in the last segment, there are a lot of very interesting primaries where a lot of people are choosing the more rhino candidate, the more establishment candidate than the true conservatives. And one of those races that is still too close to call is Representative Bob Good's primary reelection out of the 5th Congressional District of Virginia. And Representative Good has promised calling for a full recount in that closely watched election against State Senator John McGuire. So Representative Good joins me now. And Representative Good, this is very, very close. So what does the law allow for in terms of election integrity and challenges and so forth in the 5th Congressional District, and what are you preparing for?
Well, thanks for having me, Jenna. We are in this too close to call zone, if you will, and we are still working through that process and will work through that process to make sure we have a fair, accurate election that reflects the integrity, the intent of the legitimate legal voters of Virginia's 5th District. This is a race, though, that never should have happened. Former Speaker McCarthy and his allies spent $10 million that should have been used to defeat Democrats in November, instead to try to defeat one of the most conservative members of Congress, the chair of the House Freedom Caucus, through dishonest ads, distortions, deceit, to try to fool enough people on primary day. My opponent shouldn't have lied to his Senate district voters by saying he wasn't going to run for Congress. We're to believe, Jenna, similar to the presidential race, that an opponent who wouldn't hold events, couldn't hold events, wouldn't debate, couldn't debate, couldn't draw a crowd, had very little enthusiasm across the district, somehow mustered over 30,000 votes. And we did receive over 30,000 votes also, despite facing the headwind of all the establishment powers in Washington and across the country, despite the endorsement of the president against me, frankly, a dishonest endorsement where, you know, he said that I've fought him for years, obviously is not true, where he said I've been against him, which is obviously not true. He said I was bad for Virginia and I would stab Virginia in the back if I was reelected after 3.5 years. I don't know how I would do that. And whether or not the president believed that or whether or not he was just saying what others told him, I don't know. But in spite of all of those headwinds, we're in a too close to call, each of us over 31,000 votes. This is an opponent, though, that has often said he'll do anything to complete the mission. We know McCarthy would do anything to win. My opponent would do anything to win. They went in all in to get Democrat votes. And Virginia, unfortunately, have open primaries. So that's why we've had conventions in the past, to protect the integrity of Republicans choosing our nominee. But in this case, we have open primaries now. And Democrats can vote. They did outreach to Democrats. We know we got the majority of Republican voters because thousands of Democrats voted, trying to defeat the incumbent to elect the weaker candidate in Virginia for the general, which would put, if my opponent were to prevail, it would put the 5th District in jeopardy in November because tens of thousands of conservatives across the district are furious. Unfortunately, it's weakened the president in Virginia also, as hundreds of thousands of conservatives across the state are angry at him for this endorsement. And it has national implications. This is a blow against the conservative movement. This is a blow for the establishment rhino wing of the Republican Party. So all that to say, Jenna, we've got to do everything we can to battle through this, to make sure that this is a fair and accurate election. And we're in the, to your specific of your question, we're in the canvassing process now that goes through at least today. It may go beyond today. We're doing the first cursory review to see if protocols were followed, procedures, integrity in terms of the process, and whether or not there's any errors that are glaring that you can see in terms of transposed numbers or something like that. You're opening the mail ballots that were received by June on Friday, noon on Friday, that were postmarked by 7 o'clock on election day. And we're working through that process. But unfortunately, I can tell you that this process has exposed our vulnerabilities for November, because our system, Jenna, is based on the assumption, almost the way we do things, that everybody's honest, everybody's fair, everybody wants the truth, everybody wants accuracy. It'd be a little bit like running a bank and saying, okay, we're going to have no locks, no safes, no security, nothing, because everybody's honest. No one would ever steal any money. That's almost the way our election system is right now under Democrat rules that permit the ability for malfeasance. Our largest locality, Lynchburg City, the biggest city in the district, where we won, but we didn't win by the margins we thought we would, we have discovered in the process, and this has been widely publicized over the last few days, that Lynchburg City did not protect their ballot drop box, and they allowed it to ballots to be stuffed in there until noon on Friday, 3 days after the election finished. They don't have a signature saying how many ballots were retrieved from it. We don't know who opened it when. That was exposed during the canvassing process. Lynchburg should not be certified. All sides of the different campaigns, the city council races as well as our campaign, have said, hey, call into question the results here of Lynchburg. That, so what we're calling for is the election not to be certified. We've got other concerns, too, that we're exploring and investigating as well in different precincts, different counties across the district. There's much to be concerned about. Again, we just want the truth, and there's too much at stake here. Too many people have invested in the outcome of this race to not get it right. We're fighting to do just that.
Well, and Representative Bob Good, I mean, there are several things that you mentioned that I want to follow up on. And I think that listeners primarily are very concerned about election integrity, because exactly what you're saying, you know, echoes 2020 that, you know, and I was there talking about how every legal vote should count and count fairly. I mean, that's just the bottom line of our system. When the people get to choose their elected representatives, then we should have a process that follows the law, that has integrity. And if there are issues like this that need to be remedied, and not just say, well, okay, we'll deal with it in the next election, but it, you know, too bad and too late for this one. And so what to you does this portend potentially for the state of Virginia in November, but then also more widely this issue that I think a lot of conservatives are rightly concerned about with election integrity?
Well, it does expose our vulnerabilities. We saw other kind of goofy stuff. There were 3 fire alarms pulled on election day, or that went off on election day, I should say. We don't know how. And that closed down precincts for 20 minutes at a time, 3 in one day around the same time. We had, when we went to the canvassing, we get there and they started 2 hours before they were supposed to, before we were present. But my opponent was present. His team was present. We've met resistance as we've tried to record these meetings, as we've tried to get answers and timely answers to what happened and what didn't happen. So, again, there's a lot to look into here, and that we're going to do our due diligence accordingly. But it does expose that we are vulnerable. We are vulnerable to dishonest people. We found that there was Wi-Fi access at the polling places, and that is not permitted. You can't have Wi-Fi access to protect the vulnerability of the election machines, but we have credible evidence of that, that there's Wi-Fi access. We don't know why. We haven't gotten answers to that effect yet. We don't know. You know, it's hard to prove what didn't happen. We don't know what didn't happen, if you will. But we are trying to work through that and investigate that. But it does show our vulnerability for November. As it pertains to Virginia, again, whether the president realizes or not, this endorsement will hurt him, especially if my opponent were to prevail, because while conservatives hopefully will vote for President Trump, we can't afford 4 more years of Joe Biden. We have no alternative, of course. But how hard they will work to make the calls, to knock the doors, to put up the signs, to contribute the donations, the enthusiasm, when you endorse the wrong candidate that upsets the conservative base, that is not a good thing for you in the general election if that candidate were to prevail. Hopefully we'll be able to prevail on this. We believe that there is a path to victory here. We believe that if every legal, legitimate vote is counted, that we're going to prevail. We know we got the majority of Republican votes. We don't know what we'll be able to demonstrably prove here in the weeks ahead, but we're going to try to delay certification. We're going to require, best of our ability, a hand count or hand recount, matching paper ballots. That's a closer way to get to integrity. Now, of course, that's not perfect, because you could have paper ballots that were disposed of, especially when you have drop boxes that were not secure. And you don't know who took what out when, and there's no cameras at the drop boxes. Cameras are required. There's no recording cameras at the drop boxes so that we could see who opened those drop boxes. So lots of concern there that we're going to work through to the best of our ability. Certainly need everybody's help and prayer. And frankly, we need resources. If folks will go to bobgoodforcongress.com/recount, bobgoodforcongress.com/recount. They can contribute to the recount effort if they care about this race being right and accurate, and a true conservative winning, someone who's been a champion for the conservative cause and done what I believe is right over the last 3.5 years. And you don't want someone to be punished for that or to suffer consequence, or you don't want to blow by the establishment uniparty DC swamp against the conservative movement, then help our recount effort.
And I think I am echoing a lot of listeners, and I'm even seeing some of the responses come into my email now. And listeners know you can always reach me, Jenna@AFR.net. And even people are currently emailing in saying, you know, this is so frustrating. We've had 4 years to cure some of the election integrity issues that we saw in 2020 with, you know, even like in Wisconsin when the Supreme Court said, you know, well, some of these ballot drop boxes that weren't actually permissible under the framework of the legislature, and we're not going to allow them moving forward, you know. So there have been a lot of very prominent calls for change, and yet we're seeing, even in some of the primaries, this type of disaster, frankly. And I'm glad that you are standing up and saying very specifically you want to come to the correct result. And I think every American should want that, regardless of party or even their partisanship in the primary. But you also said something else, Representative Good, that I want to follow up on, which is that Kevin McCarthy invested a lot in your primary opponent. And also, I'm glad that you are calling out President Trump for the endorsement against you, because just my personal opinion is that that was a consequence, and it was a very petty one, frankly, for your endorsement of Governor DeSantis in the primary. And yet you endorsed Donald Trump after, you know, he's become the presumptive GOP nominee. And so I think a lot of people are concerned that this is going to negatively affect President Trump, but they're also very surprised that Kevin McCarthy still has this much power and influence in the Republican Party when he's no longer Speaker. Can you address why that is?
Yes, in the latter part of that, the swamp is upset that he's no longer Speaker because he did what the swamp wanted, the uniparty swamp, the establishment status quo that works for them in D.C. but doesn't work for the American people. And the people who are funding and supporting my opponent, Jenna, vote opposite of me in Washington. They vote for the massive spending bills. They vote for the omnibus bills and the continuing resolutions and the debt ceiling increase where you had 90% of Democrats join half the Republicans. They represent the half of the Republicans who have screwed the American people over the year and a half since we've had the majority. They voted to borrow $100 billion and send it overseas, $60 billion of it for Ukraine and $10 billion of it for Hamas. They voted to reauthorize FISA without a warrant requirement. So those people who are funding and supporting my opponent's campaign, if he were to win, they expect something for that. There's reason to believe and expect that he will vote the way they say. He has even said he'll do whatever President Trump tells him to do. No matter how much you love President Trump or anyone else, let's do what we think's right. Let's what's constitutional, what's conservative, what's principled, not follow any one particular person. But that's what he has said he would do. So you can expect the swamp wants something for that. The other thing I'll just say, Jenna, is if my opponent were to prevail, he has serious concerns about campaign ads he has run, where he has been unwilling to answer questions about the veracity or the accuracy of those ads relative to his military service. No media wanted to cover that, but you can bet if he's a general election nominee, the Democrats and the media will exploit that tremendously as our nominee. In addition, he's got major campaign finance violations that have been almost totally unreported by the media. You can bet if he's the nominee, they will report that. So you would have a divided Republican Party, conservatives angry about the outcome of this race, and my opponent having lots of stuff for the Democrats and the media to attack him for as a general election candidate, which would put the 5th District of Virginia in play.
Wow. And this just is a great example of why when we get to the general, if people don't pay attention to the primaries and all of these different things that you're talking about, and, you know, and not just exclusive to your race, but to primaries in general, voters then sometimes wonder, you know, why do Republicans or the best conservative candidate, which happens to generally just be Republicans, I mean, that's just accurate, why do we have the rhino sort of candidate, or we don't have a really good conservative on the general ballot? Well, it's because of the primaries. And I mean, I think the same thing happened in Arizona, for example, with Carrie Lake for governor. I mean, you know, was not the best candidate, and that hurt her in the general election. And there are a lot of other people who, you know, maybe are entertaining, but they're not necessarily the best conservative to put forward. And we could cite a lot of other examples. But this is why primaries matter, and why voters in every district across the country need to be very concerned about primaries. I mean, if people in the general election would turn out
as heavily for the primaries, that would be such a broader and bigger impact. And so what is generally that difference in Virginia between conservatives who vote in the general election but skip over the primary?
Well, you can bet that the over 200,000 Republicans across the district who have voted for me previously in general elections are waking up on Wednesday morning saying, gosh, I didn't realize there was a primary, or I meant to vote and I didn't. Gosh, how did this fella get a 300-vote lead, apparently, with Democrat votes and with the swamp buying this race through these ads? I didn't believe these ads. I just assumed Congressman Good would win and we'd vote for him in November. It just shows engagement and being informed, being involved. A lot of folks just don't do that during the primary to their detriment. Who we nominate matters. Are we gonna have Republicans in Washington, hopefully a Republican Senate and a House that will cut spending, will secure the border, will protect our constitutional liberties, and truly fight for the conservative principles we say we stand for?
Yeah, well, Congressman Bob Good, thank you for standing up. I have so much respect for you that regardless of the outcome, thank you for standing for truth anyway and doing what's right. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.